It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. And now to the Milwaukee-based immigrant rights group Voces de la Frontera and the issues they will put front and center as part of the May Day march and rally demanding policy changes at the state and national levels. Call in with your questions, your insights. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ricardo Torres is a community organizer for Voces de la Frontera in Brown County. Ricardo, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here and thank you for the opportunity.
Yes. So Monday, here it comes. Voces plans this march as part of this National Day of Action for Changing Immigration Policy. What do you want people to take away from this march?
Well, I mean, this march has been going on now for years, and it's sort of like a sacred date for not just Voces de la Frontera as an organization, but it's also been like a sacred date to a lot of Latino and immigrant families around the state. And I see that there's a lot of confusion on what May Day is. Is it an activist day? Is it a protest day? Is it, am I going out in support of anything if I go out on May Day? And the answer is yes to all of those, you know. We are going out in support of policy changes. We are going in support of a couple good things that the state has been doing. However, we're also on strike. On strike for many social inequities, social injustices that have been going on here in the state now for quite a while, and that sadly not a lot of people stand for, although the Hispanic population is the fastest growing around the country. So that's basically what May Day is. And now what every year we try to focus on, a couple of issues that are the Latino community, the Latino and immigrant community here in the state of Wisconsin. This year, we will be focusing on a couple. Some of them the biggest one that would be focused on this year would be the restoring the driver's licenses for all. It's a movement that has been going on now for, I guess, two decades, because before 2007 and for decades before that, immigrants were able to get some sort of ID. In this case, it would be a driver's license up until the federal law blocked it in 2007. So federally, there were no more driver's licenses that were available for immigrants in any of the states. So states had to, re-up that individually. Thankfully, we've been making some progress and making some noise in the country now, because now Minnesota was the last state that passed the driver's licenses for all.
I just want to stop you right there to just explore that a little bit. Last month, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz signed into law a driver's licenses for all program. How does then that perhaps impact Wisconsin as it looks to policy when neighboring states like Minnesota take this action?
It's good for our movement just because it puts more pressure onto Wisconsin legislators, Wisconsin representatives, just because a lot of the backlash that we're starting to get now is for, voter fraud and stuff like that. However, for states that have already passed the driver licenses for all movement, and especially now Minnesota, we have such a close proximity with them that it's not as hard to go and do a little more research onto, what is going on, is there voter fraud, is there not voter fraud, and so from that we can make our decisions. So having neighboring states is so good for our movement just because it puts a lot of pressure on them.
There's been sentiment from legislative Republicans here in Wisconsin arguing that loosening license requirements would incentivize illegal immigration. What is your response to that?
The driver's license is just a necessary paper that you can have. Well, it's not really paper, but it's a necessary document that one needs. And although it may incentivize legal immigration, as how y'all saying, right, undocumented immigration, I feel like for the people who are already here, is most definitely going to be a plus. Just because they have some sort of documentation that they can go off. And I mean, from that, immigration has seemed to help the country, whether it is legal or undocumented. And we see it all over the state, and all over the country. So, yeah.
I want to elevate the strike for a moment and talk a little bit about what that means and the strike being planned this year. What are you expecting?
So we're expecting to, I guess you can say, to try to make an impact, because that's usually been the purpose of May Day, is to make an impact in the community, make sure that the Latino voices are heard, and to show that Latino voices are not just a couple of people here and there. You know, the Latino voices aren't the only ones in the factories. The Latino voices aren't the only ones in the dairy farms. The Latino voices are everywhere in the state, you know, whether it be in high positions or whether it be in low positions across the state. Like, Latino voices are everywhere. And so what we want to do is to bring that impact to legislators, to everyone that's seeing us, you know, that doesn't want or that doesn't want our policy changes, right? We want to cause them to be like, wow, this Latino movement is strong, and it will be continue going strong.
To feel that in the workforce. Ricardo Torres, organizer with Voces de la Frontera, Milwaukee-based immigrant advocacy group. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Join with your questions. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The immigrant rights group Voces de la Frontera, it seeks to amplify the voices of the immigrant and undocumented communities in Wisconsin. And we explore their policy agenda ahead of the statewide strike in March on Monday. Call in with your perspective, a voice, a question, 800-642-1234. Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. Ricardo Torres is a community organizer for Voces in northeastern Wisconsin. Ricardo, let's turn to 287G, the eight Wisconsin County Sheriff's Departments opt-in to the program that allows the local police force to enforce federal immigration policy. And you go to St. Norbert's College in Brown County, which is one of those eight counties. How is the 287G program affecting immigrant communities in our state?
Well, now that there isn't a driver's license as of right now for immigrants here in the state, it's definitely very intimidating, to say the least, right? And the fact is that a lot of people do not know that this 287G program is even in the county, acting in the county. So what for those people that don't know, that like you said, the 287G basically gives the police officers the right to act as a federal ICE agent, and whenever you get stopped, they can question your citizenship status, they can ask for your social security card, and if you don't have it, they'll take you in and most likely from there start the process for you to get deported. So there's a lot of, I guess you can say, fear for those people who do know that the 287G program is going on, just because if they get stopped while going to work or if they get stopped while picking up their kids, they can probably not see their kids anymore for quite a while, or they probably won't be able to provide for the family, let's say if they're the main providers of the family, because if they get stopped, you know, it's a big chance that you might not be able to go back home. It's been something that we stopped back in 2016, right? Because it was going to be a statewide program. However, we stopped it. Voces de la Frontera, May Day March in 2016, thankfully stopped that. However, now a lot of counties, like you said, are opting into this policy change. However, we're doing again this May Day to stop that. Not just here in the state, not just to stop 287G in the state, but to please ask President Biden to stop it federally, because it only increases racial profiling here in the state.
You mentioned the Biden administration, and I want to look more broadly here. Voces May Day March is urging federal immigration reform. How should the federal government change immigration policy?
You know, I was writing a paper about this the other day, and it's actually pretty tough, right? Mm-hmm. Because immigration is not just like a black and white topic. There's a lot of gray area. There is people that get affected here in the states. There's people who get affected outside of the states. So when it comes to federal immigration reforms, and the thing is, immigration is never going to cease. like people see, oh, build a wall and immigration is going to stop. No, sadly, that's not going to be the case. If you have your mindset that way, it's definitely not going to be the case that immigration is going to stop. Like, there's going to be other ways people are going to find to come back into the country, whether an illegally sound way or a not legally sound way. What we have to think about here is to not just help the people that are already on in the States, right? So by that, giving them documents, right? Because why live a life of fear when you can give them documents? And secondly, how we can help Latin American communities, how we can help Latin American countries, whether it is forming a North American union, like the EU has their union, right? Which just makes immigration so much easier in the sense that it's much more humane. People can just travel from one country to the other without any repercussions or anything that harms them. And that's something that we have to get into our minds, that probably within the next couple of years, the United States may not be the most powerful country in the world anymore. And we have to, I guess you can say, union up with Mexico and Canada and other North American countries and South American countries so that we can create a better humanitarian state for everyone involved.
Ricardo, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Ricardo Torres is a community organizer for Voces de la Frontera based in Brown County. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the complexities now that emerge from the Lac des Flambeaux tribe setting up barricades on four roads traversing tribal lands last winter. What's at stake as the barricades were lifted about roughly 6 weeks ago and negotiations for a more permanent solution continue? Call in with questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Rich Kramer is a reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. Rich, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me back, Kate.
Well, let's take this back to January. The Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa barricades for, town of Lac des Flambeaux roads that cross tribal lands. Why did that happen?
Well, the tribe said that the closures were the result of failed negotiations over right-of-way easements. So these easements are essentially agreements that allow the town or anyone that is non-tribal to cross over tribal land. There's a strip of tribal land reservation property that these roads cross. And those right-of-way easements, some of them had expired 10 years before. So the tribe said it had been trying to communicate with these title companies that kind of provide the insurance and make sure that everything's clear on these non-tribal homeowners' titles. Also tried to work with the town and the Bureau of Indian Affairs to trying to get them to essentially help them get a negotiation going. And the tribe said things broke down, so their only option was to barricade the roads.
How vital are these four roads? What impact did they have of being barricaded at that time?
So for these non-tribal homeowners, they're pretty vital. They're the only road access to these individuals' homes. I mean, there's dozens of homes that are affected by this. It's a really rural area. A lot of the residents have told us that they have been, in the initial months of this situation, they were having to cross a frozen lake with snowmobiles or snowshoes or something to be able to get to vehicles on the other side, to be able to do their shopping, go to appointments, etc. So they weren't allowed to essentially drive to and from their homes. The tribe did have some programs set up where if they needed medication delivered, the tribe would do that. They would open the barriers to for, you know, EMS, fire, that sort of thing.
So you talked with a homeowner, backing up to March, the tribe agrees to remove the barricades for 90 days due to the, as you mentioned, the negotiations that are underway over right-of-way easements. And you talk with Dave Kivett about the tribe's willingness to at least temporarily take down the roadblocks.
The tribe being proactive and issuing at least this offer gives me hope that we'll be able to reopen the negotiations between the tribe and the town to be able to reach some sort of mutually agreeable settlement.
So, Dave Kivett, one of the homeowners suing the tribe in federal court to keep the roads open permanently, does that lawsuit impact the negotiated settlement between the tribe, the township, and the two title companies? What does the litigation do?
Yeah, the litigation predated. I mean, it gets very confusing because there's a lot of things that have happened since January, but the lawsuit predated this temporary agreement, this 60 or 90 days for $60,000 agreement between the town and the tribe. That will expire. That temporary agreement will expire sometime in mid-June, and coincidentally, that sort of lines up with the next big court action with regards to this lawsuit. But going back to the homeowners, most of the homeowners that I and Danielle Kading, who's also been covering this for WPR, have talked to, they're more upset with the town and the title companies than they are with the tribe. A lot of these people say they understand the position the tribe is in. Dave told me that Congress could fix this because Congress screwed this up by passing the Dawes Act back in the late 1800s. So there seems to be a lot of sympathy for the tribe up there.
Rich Kramer is with us, reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, as we look at the nuance and the complexities that have emerged after the Lac des Flambeaux tribe set up barricades on these four roads that are traversing tribal lands last winter. Those barricades came down, but there are ongoing negotiations. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Rich, that takes us up to this month, and we see the Justice Department filing an amicus brief supporting the tribe against the homeowners' lawsuit. What is the historic significance of the federal government stepping in and showing support for the tribe?
The tribe said it was they welcomed it, of course, but it seemed like pretty monumental. I mean, I don't normally cover tribal affairs. I don't know everything about the history, but having the U.S. government say that, you know, we think that the tribes right here and essentially the DOJ said they'd love to see a negotiated settlement, but if that falls apart, they might file a trespass action against the town. In short, the U.S. government said it holds the title to the land at issue and has the land and tribal members are under its guardianship. So essentially it said no one ever asked us about, you know, the ability to cross these roads. And I don't quite know the ins and outs, but essentially they said that this lawsuit's not the way to settle this. It's not the best legal remedy. So if things don't work out and it continues, the DOJ said it might essentially file a trespass action against the town, which would be a better legal mechanism, I guess, to resolve this dispute.
That legal brief from the Justice Department brings up the 1854 treaty, the land cessation treaty that Ojibwe signed. 1854, it really, to me, speaks to that. This issue around sovereignty in tribal lands obviously goes back a very, very long way and is complicated.
It is, and you can see it's complicated, and it's been very frustrating for the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. You can see it. I mean, they say as much in their statements. They've been pretty guarded about what they'll say, about how they'll communicate with the press, but these statements essentially say, we're a sovereign nation and people aren't treating us like that. You know, essentially they're saying that these roads were just showed up And they're trying to essentially stake their claim to their own property. So it's really interesting. And in June, essentially the lawsuit should be kind of decided one way or the other. The non-tribal homeowners want a preliminary injunction that would block the tribe from being able to barricade the roads again amid it negotiations. And so that'll be decided. And the other thing, I'm spacing on it right now. It's just going to be kind of where the rubber meets the road. No pun intended.
Because of the 90 days that the negotiations, yeah. They will come to, you know, 90 days will end in June, and then there will be the next thing that has to happen to come to an agreement here. Wondering, could this happen elsewhere? Could tribes close roads in other parts of the state in the same way the Lac des Flambeaux tribe did this winter?
I mean, it's speculation on my part, but if there's an easement, a right-of-way easement on some reservation elsewhere in Wisconsin between a town and the tribe, and it's been expired, and there's not good negotiations, or the things have fallen apart, I suppose it could. I'm not sure that it'll turn into it'll just become a common practice, but in theory, I suppose it's possible.
What will you be watching here as June nears?
So every single day, maybe 2-3 times a day, I check PACER, which is the federal court records database. And just I check to see what's happening in the docket for this case. I also keep an eye on the town of Lac des Flambeaux. They've posted some information. They had an emergency meeting earlier on in this whole saga. So that's kind of what I'm watching. I'm not near the area, so I have to kind of watch from afar. But I think the next steps, unless there's a trespass action filed by the U.S. government before June, it seems like June 7th, that's that hearing date. That seems like it's going to be pretty impactful one way or the other.
Rich, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Rich Kramer is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.